This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Community or chaos, we can construct and nurture community or fall into chaos. Over the next hour, Marvin Hubbard hosts conversations toward creating a fairer, more equal society.
Community or Chaos is made possible with the support of Quakers Aotearoa. You'll find them online at quaker.org.nz.
Good morning, friends. Welcome to Community or Chaos. Today we're fortunate to have Maria Lofiso, the city councillor, talking about homelessness in Dunedin and New Zealand. Welcome to Community or Chaos.
Ah, mōrena, and thank you for the opportunity. Thank you, Marvin.
Could you, first, people can podcast this by going to oarfm.org.nz, then going to podcast and going to Community or Chaos. Maria, could you talk about what moved you to write the opinion piece?
I had seen in the paper, belatedly, an exchange between former Mayor Aaron Hawkins and Mr. Dougal McGowan, the CE, if you like, of Football Southern, and there was an exchange in the Otago Daily Times between them about concerns that Mr. McGowan had expressed for Football Southern whānau having to clean up bits of rubbish from the from the tent encampment on the Oval that unhoused people are using.
Did he have any understanding of why people are homeless?
I'm not sure. I wasn't aware of the article until I had an exchange with former Mayor Aaron Hawkins, and so I don't know if Mr. McGowan was aware. I don't blame him. Everyone is so busy and have their own concerns, and I don't think we give much thought to the many people who are currently unhoused in Otipoti, Dunedin.
Do you think there's a kind of psychological projection when we blame homeless people for being homeless?
Well, I mean, what I think our education system and our institutions, such as media and all those institutions, I think they unconsciously or consciously sometimes depend on our, maybe they've created it, but they also depend on our ignorance, and they depend on our unwillingness to explore further, because I think what we learned, you were involved with Corso at some time, you and your family, yeah. and I was involved with Corso, and that's where we learned the question. You must always ask why. And I don't think we ask those questions enough now. And we will find that having the tolerance for having unhoused people, we have some 4,000 unhoused people in Otipoti, and that includes people who are sleeping on the couches or in the spare rooms of whānau and friends. And that is a symptom. That is a symptom of a deeper malaise. You know, the so-called obesity epidemic, the so-called, you know, smoking, smoke-free, they're all symptoms. They're all symptoms. And we focus on the symptoms and not enough resources on the causes.
Well, if people took it seriously, they might find they had to act on it.
Yeah, but as I said in that opinion piece that I wrote, We have all been collectively, in my opinion, ground down since Rogernomics and euthanasia. We have been ground down and punished if we dare to sort of lift our heads up and from the ramparts and fight.
Does this go back to 91 and the budget?
I think so.
Could you talk about that a bit?
Well, 91 was the mother of all budgets. That was Ruth, finance minister of the time, Ruth Richardson's big revelation to us all. And as I said in the opinion piece, it's just devastated families and communities for the last, 40 years. Prior to that was Rogernomics, and that was the end of the social welfare state as
they
knew it.
They were connected, really.
Yes, of course they were.
I mean, National probably wouldn't have had the nerve to do what they did if they ever hadn't first.
That's right.
Can employers get away with expecting employees to accept low wages and poor working conditions?
Well, currently they can.
If we had good social service benefits.
Yeah, but those have been eroded, Marvin, for the last 40 years.
But isn't that part of the process?
What process?
Of lowering wages. I mean, if you want to lower wages, you probably have to lower benefits.
Well, there's been, look at the pay equity. I shouldn't.
But this is all connected.
Yeah,
it's
all connected.
I mean, you can't really solve one piece of the puzzle unless you look at the whole puzzle.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
How long have we had a serious problem of homelessness in Dunedin and Aotearoa?
I cannot say that I am well versed in that, but I did. I was invited last year to talk with a small group of young King's High School students who are doing the international Cambridge qualification, so they're year 10 students, and they had been inspired to look into homelessness. And I did a wee bit of research, and what, the so-called homelessness problem is being faced by settler societies in Aotearoa, New Zealand, Canada, North America, and probably in Europe. But so
I don't know what's happening in England.
Yeah, so I see it as part of the neoliberal, so-called experiment that's, been waged on us since the 80s. Thatcherism, Ronald Reagan, and us. We're all in this together, but, we don't take time to actually look at it in a holistic way. And on the other side of the coin, if you like, I mean, we have, 70 million refugees worldwide, and that's also part of the problem. That's also another aspect of this.
Well, that's going to get worse with climate change.
Well, I was I don't know if you have the time and luxury to listen to a long-form podcast called Diary of a CEO. And it's a young British man, millionaire now, I think. He's 32, Stephen Bartlett. And I think he's of African descent. And he just takes time to talk to thinkers and people who are leaders in their field. And he was talking on July 14th to a guy called Eric Weinstein, who is has a maths PhD from Harvard and is an intellectual. It sounds like physics really floats his boat. And he says, we're in the middle of World War III and we don't even know it.
Okay, can you explain that?
Well, I've just recently, I've been saying at recent council meetings, we are on the verge of financial and environmental collapse. But I think Mr. Weinstein is correct. We are in the middle of World War III, and we don't know it.
Well, certainly we're in the middle of a crisis that we don't recognize.
Yeah.
Have there been any surveys taken of homelessness in Dunedin by the council?
Well, I don't know if there's surveys, but I've brought a copy of our housing action plan, which was signed off by council in November 2022. And as I referred to in the opinion op-ed piece that I wrote for the ODT, we only have one person working on that. And you should interview her. You definitely should interview Jill Brown.
Okay.
She is our task force, and she has a very good reputation nationally, and she's addressed a number of and been working hard on this issue for us, and has developed the Housing Action Plan, which started in the last triennium of Mayor Cull, former Mayor Cull's term. There was a Mayor's Housing Task Force that eventually ended up developing this Housing Action Plan. So we haven't got a survey as such, but Jill Brown and her associates, the people that are part of her networks, they've done a count up, and we think, as I said earlier, we have some 4,000 people who do without permanent shelter.
Could you talk about what's in the action plan? We've got plenty of time.
So in the action plan, which can be accessed on our website, it has a vision, it gives some background, talks about the community engagement, and on page 5 of this plan, we can see what we hope to achieve. And I'll just refer to it. So our guiding principles from the DCC perspective is decent housing is a human right. We need to work in partnership with Mana Whenua. We work together for common outcomes. We encourage and enable adaptive and sustainable solutions. Decisions are evidence-informed and solutions-focused, and we are aiming to get the job done. I know that Jill, if she had her way, it requires a council that actually has an understanding of the problems and is prepared to resource the solutions. And currently, this council is not about that. But if she had her way, we could eradicate so-called homelessness in Otipoti, Dunedin in 5 years.
Have past councillors been more? Has past councils been more proactive?
Yeah, well, under former Mayor Hawkins, we had in the 10-year plan, which was in 2021. So that's when we set the plan and the associated budgets for the next 10 years. We put $20 million. We sought opinions from the voting public, and the response was positive, so we put $20 million for the next 10 years, from 2021, that is, into the budget so that the DCC could build more social housing, community housing.
What's happened?
But it's been taken out.
Why?
Because that is the will of the majority of the current council. So the first job of the year, the calendar year in January, at the end of January, that is when the Dunedin City Council meets, and we either meet to agree on the budget and the plan for the annual plan, or every 3 years we meet to do the 9 or 10 year plan. And this year, last January, we had and that meeting is always 3 or 4 days long, and that's where the majority won the decision, the vote, to take $20 million from the former 10-year plan out of the budget.
I don't want to know the names of the councillors, but what was it, a close vote?
No. The majority are, in my opinion, about austerity.
Austerity doesn't seem to... I mean, we've been doing austerity for a long time.
Exactly. The same as long as we've been doing Rogernomics and euthanasia. And it hasn't worked, and it's just been so damaging.
Now, actually, a question about neoliberalism and austerity. In some ways, maybe it has worked for a few.
Yeah, only a few.
I mean, it's redistributed wealth around the world and around New Zealand from the many to the few.
Redistributed. It's outright theft, in my opinion.
Well, that's what I mean.
Legalized theft, yeah.
You've taken the public money and given it to the wealthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so alongside Jill Brown, who I recommend you should interview, I recommend you interview former Mayor Aaron Hawkins, who's now the strategic director for the Otago Housing Alliance. So there's a whole lot of Ruapuan organisations working together to address the issue of, well, the associated issues of people who are without permanent shelter. And I also recommend that you interview a young PhD candidate called Morgan Edwards. He has a blog, and he is about an alternative way of viewing government financing.
Okay, can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, subscribe to, what do you call it, the integrity something? Bryce Edwards.
Yeah,
so he produces a whole lot of links. And I happened to stumble on Morgan Edwards' blog, and I can't remember what it's called, but he set about trying to explain how the New Zealand government is a self-financing entity. And it's not that we don't need taxation or the bonds issuance system, but he's trying to demonstrate that the New Zealand government is self-financing, and so all the decisions to have 400,000 people unemployed, to all the policy decisions that governments make, whether they're Labour-led or National-led, are all political decisions. So to complain, or for the government to say we're out of money, is not correct.
Are they saying we're out of money?
Sorry?
Are they saying we're out of money and we can't do anything about it, or they're just saying we're out of money? Because we really haven't taxed the people that can afford to pay tax.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that's a political decision too. Yeah.
But New Zealand isn't one of the richest countries in the world.
Sorry?
New Zealand's not one of the richest countries in the world.
Well, that depends on your values. Isn't everything.
I've noticed that Finland, who has a population similar to ours, they have, and their resources are trees and lakes. They don't have oil. They don't have heavy industry like Sweden. Yet they have one of the best education systems in the world, one of the best welfare systems in the world.
Yeah, but
and
see,
if you get fined in Sweden for a traffic ticket, the
fine. But what you don't get, Marvin, is that Finland and Sweden and whatever, they're in Europe. Those people didn't leave home and form a settler society on other people's land. That's the problem that New Zealand doesn't acknowledge widely. Well, a number of, you know, with all the submissions and all the marches on the hikoi, yes, some of us are starting to realise that our destiny is intimately connected with Māori destiny. The same for North America, the same for Canada, the same for Australia. It's like they look over to Europe, but what is the point of looking over to Europe? You have to come. We have to come to terms with Te Riti o Waitangi and he whakaputanga. If we want to solve these problems and end them for good, we have to come to terms with Te Riti o Waitangi.
Well, my point of the example with Finland wasn't about this. It was about the fact that countries don't have to choose austerity.
Yeah.
It's not the only economic.
Yeah, but because of our settler colonial history, we will choose austerity. We will choose anti-Māori issue measures and policies, and we have been pursuing that with great determination, even into this century. And until we come to terms with that, we're going to continue to have austerity or whatever other, you know, BS that's going to be dreamed up.
I mean, I think the Labour governments in the 40s and 50s didn't come to terms with colonialism, but they did run a fairer economic system.
I agree. Yeah. And they, maybe not unconsciously, they wouldn't put it in those terms, but they realised the basic principle of manaakitanga. Manaakitaka, as a kaitahu would say, but the human capacity to care for one another and to look after one another. I mean, the children, my goodness. It's just disgusting how child-hating we are, this society.
I remember the Minister for Māori Affairs had...
Which one?
Under Norman Kirk.
Oh, Matirata.
Matirata.
Yeah.
He cared for all... the Māori people, but all the people in New Zealand, he made the connections.
Māori have always had those concerns, not only because they take manaakitanga seriously and they know this is their land and they are their aspirations are all to take care of everyone, not just their own, but everyone who calls Aotearoa home. But, you know, governments of the day... illegitimate, in my opinion, but, you know, governments of the day, they don't care about our people. They don't care about ordinary people.
I'm going to play a song now and then we'll...
Cool.
We're talking with Maria Lafosu, city councillor, and we're talking about homelessness and also the economy. How do you feel when a government minister intimates that sleeping rough or being homeless is a personal choice or a personal preference? That's one of the economic theories of neoliberalism, but how does it make you feel?
Pissed off, of course. I was privileged enough to be at the homelessness summit organised by... I know that the Tauranga City Council was one of the organisers. And that was in April, and Minister Tama Pōtaka gave the keynote address, and then there were Q&A, of course, afterwards. And I had the privilege to ask a question, and I was said, I'm just curious, Minister, about the discussions that go on in Cabinet. Don't necessarily want to know the detail, but I am just curious to know whether this Cabinet is interested in solving the homelessness problem. And he was so relaxed and, you know, said, of course I'm not going to tell you about Cabinet policy discussions, but I will say that, you know, it's not in our immediate plans to solve the homelessness problem. So I think I was gobsmacked that he felt comfortable enough to say it. But, you know, that's a hallmark of this coalition government since 2023. It's just like they don't give a crap, really, about their decisions and the impacts, the long-term intergenerational impacts of their decisions.
Actually, they've cut back in Congaregational State Housing.
Yeah.
By thousands.
Across the board. Well, even here in Otipoti, we have some developments that have started now. Kāinga orders cancelled them. And when you, I admit, I do not fully understand Morgan Edwards's thesis, but I'm looking forward to having more conversations with him. And when we actually see that the New Zealand government is self-financing, we should be so angry that these decisions are being made for political reasons, not for financial reasons.
Okay, what are the political reasons in your estimation?
Well, the it seems to be, you know, the whole free market libertarian rubbish that that Act is pursuing through their regulatory standards bill. I pray to all the gods that it doesn't get through the second reading, but I suspect that unless National and New Zealand First wake up, it's going to go through. So from what I understand is that Minister Seymour wants all the impediments to free market investment, throwing open the doors, throwing away all the protections that Te Tiriti o Waitangi gives us, and just letting, you know, the so-called Atlas Network cronies come in and rip the hell out of the economy and the people and the planet and the environment.
The way I understand neoliberal philosophy is that they really don't believe the state should do anything but perform a police and military function.
Yeah, I agree. So-called small government.
It's not really a new philosophy. It's just taken to extreme degrees.
Exactly. And the fact that ACT, with its 8% vote, it's just disgusting that this little tail gets to wag our big dog.
Well, it may be that the National Party and the leader of the National Party aren't that opposed to that.
Yeah, well, yeah, we are aware of that, but, you know, someone needs to.
I mean,
we need to vote the bastards out.
Where they can blame the things that go wrong, they can blame the ACT Party.
Yeah.
But they can, at the same time, they can push policies that they actually really believe in.
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't really know if they really believe in anything myself.
That's possible too.
Yeah.
I mean, what they really believe in is having power.
Yeah. And abusing it. Yeah.
What do you think the present government, the present government got elected as I understand it, promising to empower local bodies. Have they empowered local bodies? Can you talk about this?
Well, I wasn't there, but a number of elected members and the mayor, of course, were at the local government New Zealand conference in Ōtautahi Christchurch last week, and the Minister of Local Government, I understand, came there and said, you know, we're taking the four well-beings out of, that's environmental, social, cultural, and financial, I think. We're taking the well-beings out of the Local Government Act. And, you know, just disgusting that they can do this. I don't know. Every time they take it out, Labor puts them back in. So it's, you know, more crap from on high, really.
Aren't
so
they
in they're
a
not,
way?
They're determined.
They're centralizing authority, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. And they're saying, you know, you are being extravagant. They've been saying that since they got elected, that local government bodies are being extravagant and, you know, having nice haves in your 10-year, 9-year plans. Just concentrate on drains and you know, dog poo.
Would you expect that they would consider building council houses as an extravagant waste?
Would I consider?
No, would the, you think that, that would that be the government's attitude?
You are. Who cares?
They're not,
in
they're,
lots of ways, I don't really care what central government thinks. And I get frustrated, but I don't really care about what they think or in lots of ways, because it really is up to the, I think, the people. Once the people, clearly people are too busy trying to survive, in my opinion. But I have hoped that once people have had enough, they will rise up en masse.
Well, I hope you're right, but
well, we can only hope. We've got to carry on, even though we know the crap is rising.
Do you think that local bodies should be supported partially financially by local, by central government revenue?
Well, I haven't had much time to think about that question. I do know that the only ways that we can raise finance is due to rates.
Well, and it seems like fairly narrow.
And now that it is. It has been narrow for a long time, and now the bloody government is talking about capping rates. It's like, who the hell are you? In lots of ways, if you take the Treaty of Waitangi seriously, we have to acknowledge that in lots of ways, it's like the emperor's new clothes. It's like you don't really have, according to Te Treaty o Waitangi or He Whakaputanga, which was signed in 1835. You governments, whether you're Labour led or National led, you don't actually really have true legitimacy. And you, I don't know, this is just me. And so you can proclaim whatever the hell you like, but I think history will show that you are in great error, grave error, more and more as it goes along.
What did you think when Chris Hitchens said that we're not going to have capital gains wealth taxes while he was prime minister? He said that about 3 years
ago. Yes, I know. And I said, well, you'll lose the election, dude. And he did.
I mean, isn't one of the problems that not only here, but in America and other places, that the right-wing parties have done what they've done naturally.
What do you mean? Yeah.
Well, I think it's natural for right-wing parties to cut taxes on the wealthy. And to not support things like welfare or
it's kind of boring, hey? It's like they've been doing this for 400. I don't know how long have they been head of government? It's boring.
But the point is that the so-called left-to-center governments haven't been doing the kind of opposition they should have been doing.
Wow, because they're colonized too. Yeah. We're all colonized.
Well, but the same thing has happened in most of the English-speaking, including Great Britain.
Yeah.
In Great Britain itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, I think it's both colonization, but it's also class.
Yeah, well, that's you know, it behooves us. I don't know. I don't know where the politicians, MPs, the prime minister, I don't know what the hell they read, but I'm sure that they're not reading the same books that we are. But yes, race, gender, class analysis. You need to, if you live in a colonized settler society, you need to have a race, gender, class analysis.
Any kind of society needs that, though, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember watching in 1992, but I think it was made in 1989, this documentary. Have you ever come across it? Sale of a Nation? It's bloody good watching because it actually talks about the impact of Rogenomics and euthanasia.
I saw that.
Yeah. And do you remember watching, I think it was Sir Charles Hamilton or his descendant? So the Hamilton family, you know, invented the jet boat thing, the jet boat engine.
Yeah.
And he was nearly on retirement, or he had retired. So I think he's the descendant, the son of the Sir Charles Hamilton. But he was saying, there's no way you can have less profit than having, or not profit, but progress than having a high percentage of your people unemployed. There's no less development than you can have exporting unprocessed logs. I mean, we have city forests. We're sending logs, untreated or whatever you call it, unprocessed, to China. And when I say it's so boring, it's so unimaginative and so uncreative. That's what disgusts me. It's the waste of potential. They're prepared to have 400,000 people unemployed or dependent on the measly benefit. Just the waste of life and a wonderful human potential that in our children and our young people, you know, I think we are in World War III and we don't even know it.
It sometimes seems to me that we don't pay enough attention to what economics does and who's in control of economics.
Well, as I've said around the council table, economics is not a science. It's an art. It's a construct as well. And I do recommend that you talk to Morgan Edwards because he says he's got a lot to say.
Well, one of the problems with conventional economics, I think it's a science.
I know. Yeah. It's just one colonial construct, I think. That's for a long time benefited those at the top of the pile.
Does it benefit us when we don't think about economics? Economics isn't thought about by the left as well as the right.
Yeah, but I'm not into thinking about economics either. Because money is just a tool. Money is just a tool to express your values. And so what we need to do is talk about our values. And and tangata whenua have been challenging tauiwi, to challenging us, the rest of us. What are your values? What are your values? How are your values going to lead you to honour te tiriti, not settle it?
Well, the problem is that the values should be the lead in where what we do with our economics.
Exactly. But we shouldn't focus on economics. We should focus on our values.
We should understand
what economics. And manaakitanga, looking after people.
We should understand what economics is doing to us.
Well, in a way, but that's not, you know, again, it's not the economy, whatever the hell it is, again, a symptom. It's a symptom. Because, you know, the treaty, Te Tiriti was signed at a time when there were 2,000 or so, only 2,000 or so settlers in the place. There were between 200 and 500,000 tangata whenua. So, and tangata whenua were wanting to benefit from the capitalism, I suppose, of the British Empire. They were excited to learn, but they were also excited to teach. But, of course, the settlers weren't interested in learning anything from the savages of the day. And right now, with the coalition government, we're here again, not interested in learning a thing.
What do you think about the Green Party's budget?
I must confess I haven't actually looked at it, but I understand that they're keen to, you know, have a wealth tax, and good on them. Good on them.
Do you think the average person feels like they're part of society?
Well, what is an average person, Marvin?
Well, most people in New Zealand are low income, for instance, but reasonably low income, struggle from month to month.
Yeah. And that's what they're trying to do is struggle. That's what I say around the council table. I said, look, you need to actually understand that these surveys that you're so obsessed with are only completed by the voting public. The rest of us, who don't vote necessarily, are too busy trying to survive or have no interest or understanding of what council does. Nevertheless, our decisions impact on them. And that's what people who are privileged enough to be in council, around the council table, need to take into account. But I suspect that most of them don't.
Do you feel that... I suspect that many people don't vote, not so because they don't have time or energy, but they don't believe that their vote matters.
Well, there's a possibility that there is a cohort that's like that. But also, we don't do civics education in this country. We don't tell the real history of this country. So, you know, we can't blame them because they're not informed. They're not educated about this.
Also, I suspect if you see governments for a long time, that you have the feeling they don't govern in your interest.
Who's they? I mean, who's you? Like,
I mean, the people.
From what I understand of tangata whenua, they've always known who's the enemy.
Well, the majority of people in New Zealand may be somewhat dissatisfied with government.
Well, they voted in the coalition government.
I know, but how many people vote and why do they...
Well, it's 80% apparently for central government and like 49.1 for local government.
But they also...
Here in Aotearoa.
But they switch from party to party because they're unhappy with the results of all the parties recently.
Well, they should demand better. I mean, I don't know much about MPP, but I understand that there is the potential for, you know, the National and the Labour parties to form governments. But no, they're going to, I mean, like, they fought like hell against MP. They fought like hell, those people in power, to keep the first past the post. But now that we've got MMP, they're not doing the best, as far as I understand, the best manifestation of it now. And if they really cared, I don't know about party politics, but, you know, we should be demanding that they form, the major parties form a coalition government. So you wouldn't have to rely on ACT Party or minority parties like New Zealand First and
what you're suggesting is Labour and National should agree on some general.
Well, I understand there. That is possible under MMP.
It is possible.
Yeah. So why aren't we doing that? Because I don't know if we lack the intellectual heft to actually pursue it as a nation.
Well, probably the major parties are more concerned about hoping to become the next government or remain government than
yes,
they are
but
in having
so,
a coalition.
Yeah, they need to be challenged. Like, do right by the people. Do right by the next generations. Like, work together or get out of the way. I don't know.
How do you feel about the Green Party? The Green Party. At this point, you used to be a member, I think.
I did used to be a member, but I resigned due to what I perceived to be racism. I'm still very good friends. I'm still very good friends with members.
How do you perceive the Green Party as racist?
It's a long story, but basically when I wrote a collective letter at last year's AGM, I signed a collective letter from three of us who were involved in the Pasifika Network, and we were challenging the party leadership about the difference in treatment of female MPs. And from our perspective, Māori MPs such as Dr. Elizabeth Kerekere and Darlene Tanner were treated differently to, for example, MP Julianne Genta, in terms of violating the principle of non-violence.
Do you think, how does solidarity work in your estimation?
Solidarity, from my perspective, means a clear understanding of what your own personal struggle is as a human being, and then acting in solidarity when you see another people or person suffering.
Well, that would be, for instance, why you would go on the Palestinian walks, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And
doing everything in my power as an elected member to bring notices of motion for discussion by the council, or assisting other people to bring notices of motion for discussion at council.
What kind of motions?
Well, the city council has dealt with three resolutions so far since October 7th, 2023, the latest being a call on the city council to call on Prime Minister Luxon and Foreign Affairs Minister Peters to encourage six of their MPs, government MPs, to support Chloe Swarbrick's bill that the government take sanctions against Israel for their actions since 2023.
Would you be supporting the nurses' strike in support of the healthcare?
Yeah. I would be supporting anyone who's trying to get up and fight back. Oh, and I would encourage those of us who can. There's the since the pay equity bill was, I don't know what happened, but Professor Marilyn Waring and other former MPs have established a select committee, a people select committee on pay equity, and submissions are being sought, and they are closed on next Thursday, July the 31st. So I haven't even written mine. I've got to look at all the pay equity stuff that we need to. But I would encourage your listeners to look it up.
I understand there's a this Wednesday. There's the nurses will be out.
Okay.
At the Otago Museum.
July 30th.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Yeah, I'll be there. Thank you for telling me.
Okay. Thank you for coming and talking to us, Kiora.
I don't know if I made much sense, but hopefully you do get to interview those
All right.
real experts.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
We just had Maria Lafuso, City Councilor, talking about homelessness and the general political direction of the country. Thank you, friends.
Awesome.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.